Okay, good morning, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Welcome back to the Shalach to Go, by the Torah for our Parsha this Shabbos. We have the special privilege of reading Parsha's B'Shalach, which is loaded. So many amazing, amazing aspects of the Parsha to talk about. Number one, the Jewish people are leaving Egypt on their way out. The way out, the B'Shalach Paro Es Ha'am. And we have the amazing miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. Shira Sayam, Az Yashir. We have the man for the first time. And all the intricacies of halachos of really Shabbos are given over. Hilchos Shabbos, the framework for Hilchos Shabbos is taught vis-a-vis the man. And at Mara, we have the war with Amalek. And there's so much to talk about, it's hard to choose just five. I want to begin with a general point, a general comment. And that is, what do we call it? When the Jewish people cross, right? They crossed through the sea, right? The Jews, they were stuck between a rock and a hard place. The Yam Suf on one side, the Egyptians on the other. The Jewish people were in the middle. Moshe starts to daven. Hashem says, stop davening. We'll get back to that momentarily. What does it say? Hashem says, stop davening. That's very strange. And then go into the water. Chazal paint the picture even more bleak and more dramatic, in which Moshe says, someone's got to go in. And there are two different versions. One version is everybody's fighting over who should go in first, right? While everybody was fighting, what does Gemara say? Nachshon jumped in first. There's another presentation of the Gemara where it says everybody's fighting because nobody wants to go in. You nuts? Go to the water. We went into the desert with no food. Okay, fine. No way. There, the Gemara says that one Shevet went in first, not Nachshon. Nachshon gets all the press, but the Gemara says that Binyamin, Shevet Binyamin, went in first, and because Binyamin went in first, they were zochet that the main parts of the Beis Hamikdash were in their plot of land, in their territory, in Eretz Yisrael. Not the main parts, but a lot of the parts of the Beis Hamikdash were in their plot. What? Is the Yam Suf a bigger miracle than all the miracles we've seen before? See, we can definitely debate that at the great Pesach Seder discussion at night. What? Right. It could have been 250 makos at the Pesach at the Yam Suf. So it seems like it is, and I'll give you a proof. Yeah.
I'm sorry, repeat, what was Mendy's question?
I've been asked to repeat the question. I actually did this time. But the question is Yam Suf, the splitting of the sea, a greater miracle than the previous Makos? So I think one great proof for this, it could be debated, is by Minu Bahashem Uva Moshe Avdo. That at this moment, right, at this moment, we only see them expressing Emuna before the Makos happen, because they believed in Moshe. But here, Vayiminu Bashem and Moshe Avdo, there's this level that they experience now. This plus the experience of singing Shira did not happen beforehand. And you can argue, why is it? Is it because of the miracle they saw there? Or is it because they're oppressors were simply, destroyed in this miracle where they were not beforehand? Yes, Mendy.
I think they have to wind up to say, you have, let's look at the Makos. It's the CS in Israel, being servitude for 400 years, the biggest power in the world, being able to, they have Hashem, it's going into the world, and they see what Hashem has done. I don't know if Makos would be able. Makos would just do the way it's done. We're getting the benefits right versus now going into this.
Yep.
I would think it's like the first shot. It seemed that everybody would say, let's go. We're in God's hands. Let's just do it.
Oh, let's just go in. So Mendy's saying that once they experience the first 10, then it's obviously they should go in. We already built up this trust.
It's trying itself, not just the Marcos. It's being able to get out.
Being able to get out, right. But I think there's a difference between you have an escape, right? You have an escape route. If a prisoner is leaving, and I know the Jewish people are dafka, not compared to prisoners. Rashi says in the last parsha, they left during the day, not at night. But if a prisoner escapes, he's going to do whatever he can to taste that freedom. Whatever they can to taste that freedom.
Rabbi?
Now they're free. Oh. Now they're free. So one second, Sharon. So the next step of then jumping into the water and risking their life after they're already free, that is a new Mila. That is a new Mila. So again, you have two presentations of the Gemara. One side of the Gemara says it's so obvious that everybody would do this and they would jump in, not a question. And the other side is, no, there's a hesitation here because this is a new risk that they didn't have before. Sharon, what do you think?
No, I was just going to comment on the fact that why was it necessary for one of Bnei Yisrael? In other words, Hashem was waiting. Okay, somebody has to act. Someone has to initiate. Why was that necessary? Was that part of the Geula process? And the art. Wait just a minute.
Yeah, go ahead. I want to make a point. You're pointing out that the miracle only began when someone went in. It didn't begin just Hashem, right. Like brought the frog. Okay, I understand.
Right.
Go ahead.
Why was that necessary? Because that's part of the Geula process. That whereas with the 10 plagues, it was Hashem alone, Kavyachal alone doing it. When it came to the continuation of this process of Geula, it was necessary for Bnei Yisrael to be part of that. And that sort of empowered the slave mentality is now shifting to a freer mentality where they actually initiate and do the work themselves.
It's beautiful. So it's more of a partnership when we are part of this process of Geula. When we initiate this miracle, right? And this is the...
It's not mine. That's not mine. I don't remember who
Chazon
it is, but I heard it.
The Chazon Ish writes that is the difference between Emuna and Bitachon. Emuna, he writes, is intellectual. It's in the mind. I'm going to give you proofs as to why I believe that God is one, that there is a God, that I... whether it's intellectual beliefs, emotionally, but it's in your mind. Bitachon, Chazon Ish writes, is acting on that emunah. So I have it in my head, but how does that play out in my life, right? Someone recently just told me, don't tell me what you, show me what you say, show me what you do, right? So wonderful, the Jewish people are saying very good things, but now they need to act to show that this belief is plays itself out in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the correlation between that
and the east wind blew the entire night. Why did the east wind blow the entire night? The Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, that's all, has an article. I believe it's from Beshalach, not from the 8th day of Pesach, where he writes that the University of Colorado did a reenactment to the best of their ability of how many miles per hour would a wind need to blow by, I think they used the Red Sea as the example, with the dimensions and whatever scales they had from a few thousand years ago. And how many hours in a row would need to blow to push the water away. Now, the Torah says it blew the entire night. Presumably, the Jewish people only went in during the daytime. So that was done to always, at every moment, there is a Pesach, an opening where people can question the veracity of this miracle. That is true by this miracle, and that's true by all Eser Makos. You could have explained them all away with nature. There are articles also that express that the miracle is that the Jewish people, this didn't happen the day before. It would have helped Klal Yisrael. It didn't happen 2 weeks later or 6 years later. It hasn't happened since. It happened in the precise moment when the Jewish people needed this salvation. That's exactly when it occurred. Yeah. Chazal say, Rashi says it also in our Parsha, that the water split everywhere. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Okay, so what do we call this? In Hebrew, what do we call this? I haven't used the words on purpose. What do we call the splitting of the sea in Hebrew? What? Kriyas Yamsuf. Thank you, Rivka. Kriyas Yamsuf. If you go throughout the entire Parsha, you will never see those words used. The Torah doesn't say Vayam Kara Lifnehem. The Torah doesn't use those words. The Torah says, anyone know what the word the Torah uses instead? Vayibaku Hamayim. Vayam Bakata Lifnehem. Beis Kaf Ayin. Which also means to break. The water broke before them. Now, why does the Torah not use, right? Or why do we use that language, Kriyas Yamsuf, and the Torah uses the word Bikiyas Yamsuf? If you want to be more authentic and more Torah true, right, to what the language of the Torah is, we should use Bikiyas Yamsuf. What's the Jewish people saying Shiras Az Yashir after? Bikiyas Yamsuf. Maybe we should start a new movement. Right? Not advocating for that. But what is that? Why is that? So I want to share with you a beautiful thought that I saw in the name of the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer was the Egli Tal, who's Sukachever Rebbe. He says the following. He says, Bikiya and Kriya in English both mean to tear, to rip. But in Hebrew, they connote different ways that's done. Bikiya, think of an egg or a chick hatching. When a chick hatches, it is inside, it grows, right, within the egg. And when it's ready to enter this a beautiful, amazing world, it cracks the egg and it slowly comes out. It's a huge miracle. It's amazing to see, right? It brings tears to your eyes. It's amazing. That is called in Hebrew, bikiya. When the tearing comes from within the object, it's bikiya. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, if I went like this to my paper, which I would not do, it's Torah on here, but what is this? That's kriya. Whenever you're outside of the object and you tear the object, that is referred to as kriya. Korea. And that's why we use that word, bikiya. It's not part of common Hebrew to use like bikiya because it's a very specific type of verb versus kriya. The kroa is used all the time. You rip toilet paper, you rip other paper. It's a regular word that you use. So he says here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah. When it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, he is writing from his perspective. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, look at my people. Look how amazing they are. Sharon, the space similar to what you were saying. Look how amazing they are. Look what they did. They went into the water. We just said nuts. It's crazy. They went in. They're the ones that kickstarted this miracle. From within the water, they caused the water to tear. That, Hashem says to me, is a bikiya. It's in our tefillah, what do we call it? Kriya Samsif. We're saying, okay, whatever we did, okay, that's nice. Kadosh Baruch Hu, look what he did for us. Look what the Ribono Sha'olam did for us. He ripped the sea in half. Never did that before ever again. Lohaya velo yiyin. Amazing. Maybe individuals it happened for, but not for the Klais. This happened. Amazing. Amazing. We call it Kriya Samsif. Because we are reflecting on the beautiful miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed for us. And he is referring to, we did have another Kriyas Yamsuf, Kriyas Yardin, when the Jewish people entered the land of Israel. Correct, fact checked. So that happened, it did happen once before, but it started now, and it only starts here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is focusing on our actions and how amazing they are, and Hashem, and we are referring to Hashem's actions. Yes.
The Yarden is not the Yarden, it's just one side. I don't know if there is so many views in the Yarden.
Chazal go into more miracles. Yeah. I think it's Parag Vav or Parag Zion of Sefer Yoshua.
It wasn't split, it was one side.
There are huge columns. Huge columns were made.
No, yeah. Now I'm saying the Yarden was just
right.
One side. It's not.
Now it's like it was 12 mm-hmm. sections. Yeah. Each.
Yeah, different Mamari Chazal. There are 12, there was one, there was two. Yeah, different Mamari Chazal as to how exactly that worked out. But we see here that when you're in a relationship, the most important part of a relationship, Ani Le Dodi V'Dodi Li, is that you focus, we focus, you know, the on what, how awesome, right, your spouse is, your, and the other focuses on, wow, I'm so lucky. Right, and that's the Jewish people leaving Egypt. That was the focus here. That was the focus. That's why the Kedusha Slavi writes, Pesach has two names. We call it Pesach, and the Torah is called Chag HaMatzos. Torah has both names there. But so the Kedusha Slavi writes, Chag HaPesach is what we call it, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu skipped over our houses. What is Hashem called? Chag HaMatzos. You went into the midbar for just a few crackers? Whoa. We don't go into an airplane for 2 hours to Miami with just two crackers. Bagels and pretzels and bags of potato chips and then you're waiting for what they give you. It's a whole we went into the midbar with nothing, just with a few crackers. Unbelievable. Huge miracle. And that is the beauty of the synthesis of this relationship here between the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. When we leave Egypt, when after Kriyas Yamsuf, right, after this happens, the Torah tells us, right, Miriam sings, Vayasa Moshe Es Yisrael Miyamsuf. Vayasa Moshe Es Yisrael Miyamsuf Vayetsu El Midbar Shur. So Vayasa is also a funny verb. The Torah should have said Vayisa Moshe. Moshe led the people out. Vayasa is Lashon Hif'il. Those from listening from Israel will tell me if that's, I think that's correct. Hif'il is a very strong language, which means I forced Moshe, like almost had to take the Jewish people and grab them from the shores of the Yamsuf and bring them into the Midbar. Why is that? Why Vayasa? Rashi writes, he see and bal korchan. He forced them out. She'itru Mitzrayim es suseim b'tachshitei zahav v'kesef v'avanim tovos u'margolios. The Egyptians just didn't go into the Midbar, go to chase the Jewish people with their horses. They decked them out with gold and silver and precious jewels and pearls. And now that they all drowned in the sea, the Jewish people were waiting by the shores, grabbing all of the Bizas Mitzrayim, all the spoils of Egypt at this moment. And they didn't want to leave because there was so much there to take. So Moshe needed to grab them, take them, and say, gotta go. It's not about the jewels. It's not about the gold and silver. There's nowhere to even use it in the Midbar for the next 40 years. We need to go into the Midbar. They gave in when they left, and now there's even more. So the way Rashi expresses Vayasa Moshe in the very negative light, they were still petty. They were still as avadim, you know, they had that mindset, they had that avdus mindset. Rav Hirsch takes the opposite approach here. Vayasa Moshe. Why were the Jewish people stuck by the shores of the Yamsuf?
See, I'm optimistic, not always, but this time. Maybe because they couldn't believe their eyes that they're finally free. these guys are lying all over the beach. All their stuff is lying over the beach, and it hits them.
Right. So Honey's suggesting there was like a moment of like, we need to stop and pause and awe. Oh my, like, what did we just go through? The Makos took Chazal, say, a year. What did we just go through? Like, this was, you know, they're going to be talking about this forever. Right? They're going to make movie after movie about what we just went through. Oh my, like, yeah. Rav Hirsch takes it a step further. He says that we experienced at this moment a Gilui Shechina, a revelation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu at this moment that we have not experienced before. Even by Makos Bechoros, that Hashem was there, we were inside, we weren't outside, right? Here, to see the Yad Hashem on such a minutia, in such detail, we experienced this at this moment. We need to soak it up. We need to soak it up right now. We can't leave. We need to stay in this moment of spirituality, bask in this moment, and stay here. Let's set up the yeshivas, right? I think this is what let's set up the yeshivas here. We don't need to go anywhere else. So Rav Moshe tells them a very important lesson. He says that that's not where you're meant to be. We're meant to take, soak it in, learn everything you can from these experiences, and then we need to go on to the next stage, right? Some people experience amazing moments, but they live in those moments the rest of their lives. They live in those moments the rest of their lives. They talk about them, which is great, but as if like, that happened then, and that was my highest point. And I'm 20 years later, I can never get back there. Moshe is saying we can get back there. But we need to go on and start our lives.
Rabbi?
This
also was the height of their bitachon. If they thought it was just a fluke, like the atheists or whatever, scientists are saying that it's just that opportune moment where it's, the Yam Suf split, but the fact that they were able to stick around and grab the Zav, etc., showed they had enough bitachon that it's not going to close on them, because they had the fear of coming out after Nachshon took the first step. But the fact that they stuck around, that's the ultimate. That showed that they had it. They weren't concerned that it's going to come back over them and drown them.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, Yossi.
Three-day trip.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took 3 days to get to the Yatsa.
Correct.
So their mindset was probably, okay, 3 days are up. We've got to go back now. Otherwise, Moshe was lying.
From the Egyptian perspective, Moshe told the Jewish people they're leaving for good. When it comes to the Egyptian perspective, maybe, but Paro has like a short-term memory. Because Paro said, just get out of here. So now Paro is reneging on that. Part of it is, again, we're like, what's cool about the beginning of the Parsha, when you're learning the Parsha, is like different scenes. So you're like, all of a sudden you're brought to like Paro's palace, and he's like sitting there with like his advisors, and they're telling him, they don't know where they're going. They're completely like lost. Like, there's still a chance to bring them back. You could really do this right now, because they don't know where Nebuchadnezzar, Sagar, they don't know where they're going. So Paro could definitely use that as a pretext. 3 days, what's going on? You're not telling the truth, for sure. He could use that right now, for sure. Okay, let's actually go there.
There were also some skeptics that thought that they had got gone back before, actually, instead of drowning. They did not drown. They just turned back to the original area where they took off from and were saved.
Yeah. Rabbi Lapp is correct that according to the Bali Tosfos, they ended up on the same side of the shore that they started on, just a little further down. They made like a semicircle in the way that they went. Okay. Which is the different discussion for different time. So Rash, the Torah tells us the following. The Torah tells us, "Vayibishalach Paro ha'am v'lo nacham Elokim derech eretz plishtim ki karovu." Hashem didn't allow them to go through the Plishti lands because it was close. So Rashi tells us, why is that such a bad thing? If they go there, then there's always a chance that they can return. And that's why it was bad, because if they went that way, they can always return, and therefore they would never feel fully free or be able to look towards the future as opposed to looking back. The Rav Druk on this pasuk quotes a medrash. The medrash compares the Plishtim. It's actually the first perek in Sefer Tehillim. Ashre ha'yish asher ha'lo halach ba'asas rasha'im u'derech chatayim lo amad u'v'moshav leitzim lo yashav. U'v'moshav leitzim lo yashav. Praiseworthy is the person that does not settle or live amongst the leitzim. That, he says, refers to the Jewish people never living amongst the Plishtim, because the Plishtim are considered leitzim. What's a leitz? I've been called a leitz probably a few times by some of my, right? A leitzan in modern Hebrew is a clown. What's a leitz? A leitz is a cynic. A cynic. A cynic, Rav Huttner writes, is somebody that's able to take something amazing, something very inspiring, or you know, spiritual and holy, and just based on one comment could knock down that entire experience. What was the concern to go into Plishti territory? They're going to go there. They're going to say, "What happened? Esamakos, look at these miracles, unbelievable!" And they're going to say, "No big deal. No big deal. Oh, or we could do some of those." And when a cynic makes that one comment, it could destroy, he says, skyscrapers of spiritual growth and understanding, just with that one comment. So Rav Druk writes, Hashem was very concerned about this midah of cynicism. And he said, this is something that you can't have any in your body. It's very dangerous to be cynical. The, you know, parenting expert, definitely not to one's children. It's a very bad idea to be cynical at all in any way. And to, because it's unhealthy. It's dangerous. It's dangerous. So he writes that that's why they left. The Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah doesn't say the same idea, but it's similar. He says, Ki Karovu, it would have been faster to get to Eretz Yisrael if we went through the Plishti land. It would have been faster. It would have been faster. Someone that I know, actually, I bumped into him recently. I remember him sharing this with me. I was much younger. And he said to me that he went into Chinuch. He decided to be a Rebbe, as opposed to going to finance, because of this word. He said he was once listening, and he wasn't sure. He was in YU, and he wasn't sure what to do. And he heard from the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim writes that going through the Midbar was much longer, more challenging, more arduous. Spiritually, it was more rewarding. Because if they went through the Plishti land, it might have been quicker, might have gotten you the packages that you wanted, or the, you know, the funds, you get you there faster. But spiritually, there were way more obstacles to go through the Plishti land. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim writes, you see from here that what is better is to take the longer route. It's a personal decision. What that longer route is for him, he said, it means that I need to go into chinuch, right, for this individual. but it means you take the spiritually safer route than to go down the route that is more tempting and physically or could be more spiritually dangerous. That's what you see from here. Yeah. That we, yeah, for sure. We have free, yeah, yeah, free will, for sure.
Excuse for sure. me, Rabbi?
Yeah, Sharon?
I just want to alert Rita. Rita's phone is on my, I don't know if it's true about everybody who's on Zoom, but I'm watching Rita do whatever she's doing on her phone. So she has to stop sharing her screen or something. I don't know what's happening.
Right. Maybe we'll shut off that option. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. Okay. There we go. Thank you, Rita. Okay. The last thought for today, there's a lot to talk about, comes from Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Matitzak Eli, Daber El B'nei Yisrael V'Yisau. Why? So they're by the Yam Suf. Just imagine the scene. Moshe starts to daven. He whips out his Tehillim, and he starts to daven to Ribono Shel Olam. And Hashem says, why are you screaming at me? Talk to the Jewish people, and go weiter, go on. Be so, travel on. So this is not what you would think. Like, you're in yeshiva, and you start pouring out your heart, and your Rebbe says, your teacher says, stop davening. Stop davening. What? So Shlomo Volbe, this is, I never quoted Shlomo Volbe, he's a great influence on my life. Shlomo Volbe was a great Baal Musar for many decades in Eretz Israel. He passed away in the early 2000s. He writes, he has two answers to this question. This is his shiurim on Chumash. Answer number one, he writes, is that there's two different types of tefillah, two different goals in tefillah, in general. Not like those, it's bakasha and hodah, but one is just to get close to God. Right? There's a closeness that's created with davening. And secondly, there's a type of tefillah that is a bakasha, a need. There's a need right now for something. Someone needs to get better. Yeshua needs to happen. And we daven to God. He says one thing you see from here is that when it comes to the type of tefillah that is just closeness or kirva, he calls it hisalos, getting elevation. That tefillah, you pour your heart out, you sit with your tehillim, you sit in your shmon esrei, and you dive in for as long as you want to dive. When it comes to these bakashos that are needed, they don't need to be very long to be effective. He says, Bakasha, Mati Tzaki Lai, Tefillah Ketzara is good enough. And his proof is from when Miriam was ill with Tzara'as, Moshe davened a very short tefillah, Kelna Refan Allah. It's not always necessary to daven a long tefillah there. The second idea may be connected. The answer, it's probably a second answer, but they could be connected. He says, especially, I'll just say this, but it's in front of the other people. You know, you're probably making Klai Yisrael nervous if you're davening too long. Right? That's a very practical suggestion. Sometimes if you're in the room with the chola, it could make them very intense or make them very uncomfortable as to what's going on. So you have to know how to do it and what to do. And he says, Lamadna mikan halacha bimeinam del chadero, shagam shu mispala ba'ad chadero, akeva shechadero zokuk lo gam milvada tefila. Here, the people need you to daven for them, but they also need you physically. They need you to talk to them. They need you to lead them. So to daven too long is going to take away from the practical needs. So he says, you see from there that in those moments, don't daven long. A tefillah katsara is a good tefillah, is an effective tefillah. And that would be enough over here. So matitzak elai, he says, is not don't daven at all. But be sensitive to how long one should daven for. It's a very important nekuda, a very important point when it comes to just our practical, tefillos in general when we're davening somebody in the room, when we feel guilty over how long we've davened for, or we just are juggling so many different responsibilities. Revolvi makes a very, very sharp point here about matzitzakim. So just to review what we learned today, we discussed in general Kriyas Yamsuf. Did they want to jump in? Did they not want to jump in? Two different presentations of Gemara. I think it's Daf Lamed Zayin, Daf Lamed Ches, and Sech Sota. Then we discussed Kriyas Yamsuf versus Bekiya. Where is the emphasis? Rav Hirsch, beautiful Rav Hirsch, and Vayasa Moshe, they wanted to hold on to all of those spiritual experiences and never leave that moment. Our job in life is to get those spiritual experiences, but then bring them into the midbar moments in our lives. Then we discussed the plishtim. When you have two choices in front of you, right? Where do we go? Right? It's the Robert Frost poem. The road not taken, right? So sometimes it's about taking the longer road and not the shorter road. And the last thought was from Rishon Mavobi, who writes, Matitzak Eli. We learn from here that sometimes it is necessary and prudent and to have a shorter tefillah versus a longer one. Wish everybody a wonderful week. For those up here in the Northeast, stay warm this Shabbos. It's going to be a great Shabbos. We're having an amazing Shabbos Shira Chazanim lineup for Friday night through Shachar's Musa and Pesukim D'Zimra. We're going to sing Zmiros and Pesukim D'Zimra. It's not going to mean Shabbos is not going to be 3 hours long, David. Don't worry about it. First time I'm coming in, whatever. It's going to be great. It's going to be really beautiful. And Sfardi Minyan Shabbos, Baruch Hashem. See him in the Megillah today. It's going to be great. Everyone have a great day and a great Shabbos.